Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Before we start, I just want to mention, please, when you are here, then nobody should be going upstairs, because now this is an ashram, so if you need to go to the bathroom, that's one thing, but no, don't go up on the corridors, because boys are there, they have their own stuff there, and they feel uncomfortable if somebody would walk there. Okay, let's be finished. Did we already do that? Unless one develops the path of devotional service, he cannot be 100% clean from all the sinful reactions? Probably not. No, we just did before, right?
Yeah.
So, any questions on that? On the previous? So, unless one adopts the path of devotional service, he cannot be 100% clean from all the reactions of sinful activities. Sanat Kumar says, "My dear king, the false ego of a human being is so strong that it keeps him in material existence as if tied up by the strong rope. Only the devotees can cut off the knot of this strong rope very easily by engaging themselves in Krishna consciousness. Others who are not in Krishna consciousness but are trying to become great mystics or great ritual performers cannot advance like the devotees. Therefore, it is the duty of everyone to engage himself in the activities of Krishna consciousness in order to be freed from the tight knot of false ego and engagement in material activities." So, I mean, we discussed the point before, how it is, if you don't have some higher taste, you don't have a goal which you want to achieve, then it is very difficult to give up something lower. So here the same thing, that unless one adopts the path of devotional service, then it will be very difficult to get completely cleared of all the anarthas. Why? Because the devotional service, and whatever we do, and however, we get the taste for it by serving the Lord. So when we get the higher taste, we don't even think about the lower. So then the lower taste is not, and we don't put emphasis on. For us, the emphasis are on the higher level. So we are serving the Lord, and everything naturally just disappears what it's not connected to the Lord. But if the emphasis are on getting rid of the lower ones, then it will be very difficult. Like getting like we want to get rid of some bad habit, then if you try thinking about that you should not do this, you should not do this, then it's very unlikely you will get rid of this habit. Because you constantly engage the mind in thinking about the habit, and that will engage your activities in getting into it again and again and again. But if you instead look for something which will be very, it will make you transcend this habit, something which you will be fully absorbed in, and you forget about that you had any habit like that, so that not thinking about the habit, it will make you completely forget about it and get rid of it. Yes?
In terms of sadhana bhakti, we have like different processes for different habits or desires. When it is, how to discriminate? When it is enough to just, when we can transcend a desire, when we have to analyze it philosophically to reconnect it to Krishna, and when we, for example, have to change ashram because of such desire?
You see, it is individual. We have to, it really depends on the individuality, depends on our nature, depends on our conditioning, and then we have to be very honest to ourselves. So we know what the rules are. We know what the regulations are. Are we following them? And are we following them because we want to, or just for the sake of following, or just to show off that we are doing something, but actually it's not our intention to follow them at all. We have to be honest to ourselves. So if you want to just show off and, you know, look like pure devotees, right, so then we dress up as such and then just go. But as soon as we are at home, then we have nothing to do with devotional service. It's unlikely we will understand what we are supposed to do. So it is individual. And it is really depending, you know, purely on us, what we are going to do and how and why. Because Krishna did give us the free will to, you know, either execute activities connected to Krishna or opposing to Krishna. So if we do want to become a devotee, if we do want to serve the Lord and we are serious about it, then nectar of devotion is the answer what we should do, and not externally. We should do it, you know, in our lives, not just for sake of doing it, but we should apply it and use it in our life as the instructions are. Then, as Rupa Goswami guarantees, as Srila Prabhupada guarantees, then we can go back to Godhead. But if we don't do that, it's like going to a doctor and he gives you medicine. And he said, take this medicine, you will be cured. Then after 1 week you come back, not cured, and you are even worse. And he asks, did you take the medicine? No, it was bitter, I didn't like it. But no, you are a bad doctor because you didn't cure me. Well, I gave you the medicine, you refused to take it. That was your fault, not my fault. You cannot blame me for that. So the acharyas, no, Srila Prabhupada, they give us everything. But it's up to us to take it. Some claim that Srila Prabhupada writes the basic. And you have to go somewhere else to take the nectar. Some may see only basic in Prabhupada's book because he writes about the basics. But if you understand, if you realize, and if you look into what Prabhupada writes, then there is the highest nectar of Radha Krishna pastimes written in his book. So, therefore, these kind of claims are not valid. So, it depends what you are looking for. If you want to see how to advance in devotional service, you will find it. If you want to see how to show off, to look like that you are advancing devotional service, you will find that also. So, to be able to discriminate what we should do, then first we have to be very honest to ourselves, what we want, and then act accordingly, following Guru Sadhu Shastra. Guru Sadhu Shastra must become something which we accept as a value. We accept it as it is. We accept it as our guidance. And then if we are capable with our intelligence, who can understand Guru Sadhu Shastra, because it can discriminate, so understand what's good, what's not. So based on the values, based on Guru Sadhu Shastra, then it can guide our life, and then if we are in control of our mind, then everything will be auspicious. Then we know what we should do. Then we feel, if we have desires for the opposite sex, we have desires for emotions other than as a brahmachari, then we know that we have to get married. Like, nothing wrong with that. So that's not a problem. But if we don't do that, and we say, well, no, just chant and everything will not be okay. It's true if we actually are ready for it. Otherwise, what may happen that the emotions, even though they are not there, but we don't address them, but we don't know how to deal with them. And in fact, we cannot get rid of them. We cannot just give them up. So we are pushing them, try to not to see. And after that, one day, it's very likely, it's going to explode. And then, we will look for anybody. Devotee, non-devotee. I know one devotee, he was 20 years brahmachari, and then, suddenly, just one day he gets married to a Muslim girl, meat-eating family. Doesn't matter. So if we would do it at a time when the push for the lust is not so strong, then we can do it right. And then we can find somebody appropriate, within devotees, and could go much smoother to our satisfaction. But again, the honesty is the main element there. Yeah? Yes.
You were speaking about dropping the bad habits of the anarthas.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying, as far as I understood, that rather than contemplating on how bad it is or the negative aspect, that we should reinforce the positive aspect or the mm-hmm. positive engagement. Is that right?
Yeah. For the same reason. Then, see, if you keep constantly thinking about the negative elements, so that engages your mind in constant thinking about it, and you will be in contact with it, so you will be always thinking how to do it again, even though you don't want to. But like, I don't want to smoke today, but just that you are thinking about smoking, and if somebody's addicted to it, I just want. It's not that, but if you think about something else which this doesn't even remind you about smoking, so then you don't, and then you are not really even thinking about it. You should have, or like fasting, say for Janmashtami. If you fast because you want to please Krishna, so then you engage yourself in devotional service. Do something special, chant more rounds, engage yourself on the altar, or do some help to create some pastimes, or whatever, just engage the whole day yourself, and you will probably not even think about eating. You will not. But if you are thinking that you are fasting, I'm fasting the whole day, and then, but at night I will take this and that and that, you know, and then the next day feast, and it will be, you know, so, and then your day is all, you know, prashad conscious, and no, where is the fasting? You already broke the fast. So, and then if somebody, you know, offers you something, oh, actually I'm hungry, and maybe let's just go behind the corner, I can eat something quickly. No. So that's because we are constantly engaging ourselves in thinking about it. But if you, know, do something else, just something which makes you forget about it, then you will not even think about, you will not even bother it. Yeah. Yes,
one time in Bhagavatam class on Gurudam book, he said, don't think about red cars. And then he said, so what do you think about? And everyone obviously thought about red cars. So, I mean, that illustrates the point that if we're always saying, don't think about that, don't do that, then we're actually thinking about
it. Yeah, yeah. It is.
Well, in this regard of not focusing on the lower activities, if we find that if we're in a certain situation, like with a certain group of people, and with those people there is a tendency to perform some sinful activities, then should we, is it better to avoid the situation or to engage in some higher activity with the same people?
Well, you see, it's like this. Sadhu Sangha is extremely important. Now, so you want to associate with Sadhu Sangha. A Sadhu Sangha, it's also very important. You should avoid a Sadhu Sangha. So any activity which you know that it's going to be, you know, not for your development, you should avoid. Because it's unlikely that it's going to help you in any way. Now, if you have a friend, and the friend have difficulty, right? So, and maybe he stopped following some of the regulative principles. So, as association, no, it will be not good for you to take association from him. But what you can do, you can give your association to him. In other words, you don't have to listen about how he doesn't care about it, and actually it's good, because he doesn't feel that way anyway. He's just making a smoke screen. Because he just compromised himself, and now he feels bad about it. So you don't have to listen to this. But you can give him advice what actually he can do and how, so then he again come up back to the same platform. For that you have to be knowing how to do it. So you have to be first based on relationship. If you have power or influence over the person, then yes, then you can instruct them. Power, okay, you are stronger. There is some little kid doing some nonsense, he just comes, hey, get out of here. So they will listen, right? But if you don't have it, somebody no bigger than you, and then and you don't know him, then it will maybe difficult for you to say something. But you can go and call authority, call somebody who can do something about it. That's what you should do. And if you have influence can be due to relationship. So he's your friend, you are very influential to him. And you see that he does something wrong. So if he is your real friend, then you will correct him. Because you don't want your friend to see not doing something bad. But of course you know him, so then you may not correct him right at the time. You may just be very discreet, so you can do it in a very subtle way. No, depends on what his mentality is, as you know him. But you do it in the friendship mood. And he understands, he will take it like this. So if you have the power or influence over a person, then yes, you correct them and it will be very beneficial. But if you don't have either, then you better just tell somebody who has. If you care about that person, then you know, see that somebody else who has either power or influence over that person, then they will do something about it. Because if you try to do something on your own, then generally you end up bad.
Bad means
yeah, it means somebody will get on your case. No. Maybe if you go and then you see some kid doing nonsense, and if you just don't know the kid and you scream at the kid, then you will have the parents coming after you screaming at you, "Who are you to scream at my kid?" It happened. So then rather keep quiet, okay? No problem. I don't see. Or tell somebody who can. So that's the point. Because if you have the influence, then they will take you seriously. There is a relationship. There is something is developed there. If you have the power, they will have respect. Yes, okay, you know, you are, I know. Out of that influence is more powerful. Because it's long lasting. It's based on the relationship. Power, as long as you are stronger, they will listen to you. But when they become stronger, then who cares? Who cares about you? Nobody. No. So, if you want to really help somebody, do somebody, so then develop relationship. Based on the relationship, then you can actually develop some influence over that person, and based on that, you can help him.
And if there are two people who have the same problem, then is it possible for them together to help each
other? No. If there are two, they will say, well, together we can work it out, but they will only come to bigger and bigger nonsense. They need somebody who can tell them, no, don't do this, who will supervise them, who will actually mean it well for them, who will build their well-wisher, and they will have to develop trust in that person, that actually he means it well for them. Then they can do something. But if not, then until they come to their own understanding of that what they are doing is not correct, then it's unlikely that they will change. Yes?
The previous point you were talking about, when we repress, like for example, if you have a sex desire, repress it until. Is it the higher taste which brings up the change?
Yeah, you see, as we said, just one chanting of the holy name can remove all the sinful activities and all the anarthas also. The sinful activities, they go. The anarthas, then we have to give permission. So, but if we don't, then we still, even though we are chanting the holy name, but still we may still maintain the sex desire. But as we start to understand that the sex desire is not the highest what we can achieve, it doesn't give the taste as serving the Vaishnavas, serving the Lord. So we come to the level of realization that that's not the best. Based on that, then we get the higher taste. And then we are not afraid to give up the lower. The state when we are giving up the lower, but we don't have the higher taste, then we are insecure. We don't know who we are. We are lost. So therefore, we are afraid to give up lower taste before we get the higher. And why we are not getting the higher taste easily is because we are afraid of authorities. We don't have trust in our teacher, in our guru, if he means it well for us or not. Because either we got in previous life or sometimes previously in this life, we got burned, something happened. So the chain of authorities, the mother, father, then the teachers and guru, somehow it was broken. So then if that's there, so it will be more difficult for us to accept the authorities. And if we don't accept the authorities as the authority of Lord Himself, then it will be very difficult to accept for us Krishna Himself. So if that's there, then we have to learn. We have to give ourselves more time. And only by experience, when we see that Krishna is not going to cheat us, our guru is our well-wisher. He means it well. So we have to gain the experience, then only we are capable of fully surrendering. Once we surrender, now to the extent we surrender, to the extent we can detach ourselves from the material nature. So that's our conditioning that way. But the moment we fully surrender, the moment we don't have any difficulty. Because we have full trust that our spiritual master will deliver us to Krishna. How the Krishna consciousness movement can attract the attention of the whole world, and how each and how every man can feel pleasure in this Krishna consciousness, as stated in the Padma Purana. A person who is engaged in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is to be understood to be doing the best service to the whole world and to be pleasing everyone in this world. In addition to human society, he is pleasing even the trees and animals, because they also become attracted by such a movement.
Did I?
Oh, yeah, no. You can cross that one. So, now, I suppose everybody heard the saying that you can please everybody for some time, you can please somebody for all the time, but you cannot please everybody for all the time. And based on the material situation, yes, it's true. There is no situation which will be pleasing to everybody all the time. You see the political situation, democracy was supposed to be such. But there is nothing like democracy what they tell us there is. Now, monarchy, it's a different system, but again, some are pleased, some are not. Sometimes the system is, more ideal as it's supposed to be. When the king is ideal, then he can have the ideal situation. But even say Lord Ramachandra, who is the Lord himself, he found a problem in his kingdom just because one citizen was not so happy. So, and then he would take it seriously. Nowadays the politicians, they don't really care what the people even think. They just care of how much they get. So people are being cheated, and people are cheating. It's the properties of the conditioned soul. What can we do? But Krishna consciousness is different, because it gives happiness to everybody, and the happiness is permanent. So it only depends on us how purified our heart is, then to that extent then we get the understanding of how much happiness Krishna consciousness brings. So then we go for Harinams, distribute books, distribute prasad, and that way then slowly those people who accept it, they become purified. But at that time, when they are being purified, they may still not be showing how willing are they to be purified. But there will definitely be time when they will appreciate it once. See, it's like teaching. Teaching is, one may say, actually a very ungrateful job. Because you try to teach, and somebody may grasp the what you are teaching immediately, and somebody, you know, takes days, months, years, and not getting it, not catching it properly. But the teacher just doesn't give up. He's always trying to find some new angles of approach, how to explain the material, how to teach. And when the student understands, and it can be after years and years of saying the same thing, then he understands to the level that actually he realizes that what the teacher actually is telling him. Then that's the reward for the teacher, that actually this is the, you know, the best moment in the teaching of that student, because the student understood the instruction. So it takes some patience, a lot of effort, but that's the reward which the teacher gets for attempting to teach somebody. So then so that way then also spreading the Krishna consciousness, it's we may not see the immediate effect. And even Nityananda Prabhu, when he goes, and Balaram himself, he goes and he asks, please, chant the holy name, and then they chase him away. So to us also it may happen, but we should not get discouraged by it. We should even actually see it as an opportunity for doing more devotional service. Maybe I didn't approach the person right. I could have done it a different way. Maybe I was too rough. Why don't I try approaching the person again different way? I know one devotee, one Mataji, and she was distributing books. And while distributing books in the West, and then once she was giving some book, there was father and son, and then she told him, don't you want Bhagavad Gita? I said, no, we don't want it. And then, we don't read this, we are Muslims. Okay, but Muslims also read, right, the Quran, and Quran speaks about God, Bhagavad Gita also, it's a different approach. And so then she was preaching to them, explaining a little bit about our philosophy. And the father, he was a little interested, he was listening. But the son, he was very impatient, he didn't want to listen. So then she asked, it seems like your son is not very interested in transcendental knowledge. And she asked, are you chanting the Allah's name? He said, no, I'm not chanting. Why not? And then the father explained, well, his mother passed away, and then now he is little upset. And then she started talking about karma, because they also know. So and then she explains, and everything is in the book. And then somehow the son becomes very, very interested. And the father, then he just takes like $20 or something, and then he was giving. He said, I don't need it. And then they were talking. And the father, and also the son, was very much impressed, and he actually was really amazed. And they said, okay, we will take the book. And so the father, you know, he was giving $100 then. Just, but she said, no, I don't need it. This is no, I just wanted to really help your son, because I know that there is a knowledge in the book which definitely helps, will help your son. He said, no, please take it. No, you have to take it. He said, well, I can only take it if no, really your son has full conviction that the knowledge can help him in his problem. I said, yeah, I'm fully convinced. Please, no, do take it. No, it's a donation for you. I will be very happy if you take it. Then, no, she took the donation and, no, she did convince and maybe even made to devotees that moment. So, we don't know when Krishna consciousness makes somebody happy. Many times we are not even really conscious of how Krishna conscious we are. So then, like, we may just walk in Dhoti on the street, and people just by seeing, they become, they oh, look, Hare Krishnas are coming. I was once in Hungary, and I don't know if the devotees didn't go very much on the street in Dhoti, it was in Budapest. But, was it gone? Anyway, and then I was in Dhoti, and then some old man comes to me, and starting in Hungarian something speaking. I didn't understand anything. But then the other devotee, he explained to me, they said, he was asking, where are you all hidden? I didn't see any devotee for 15 years. No, where are you hidden? Why are you not coming out? So, just by dressing, just by putting the tilak on, we preach. We don't even know about it. But that itself, it just shows how perfect system Prabhupada established. So just following the simple basic rules which Prabhupada did give us, we can achieve the highest perfection. And just because we are not aware of it, then we take it for granted, or it's not important, and we start to decide what's more important, what's less, and we get lost. But if we would follow exactly the instructions of our guru, of our acharyas, then there is no space for a mistake. How to develop good qualities and give up unfavorable qualities? My dear king, persons who have unflinching faith in Krishna and are without any duplicity can develop all good qualities of the demigods. On account of the devotee's high grade of Krishna consciousness, even the demigods like to love him, to live with him. And therefore, it can be understood that the qualities of the demigods have developed within his body. Vaishnava Bhagavatam 5.18.12. On the other hand, a person who is not Krishna conscious has no good qualities. He may be highly educated from the academic's point of view, but in the actual field of his activities, he can be seen to be baser, lower than the animals. Even though a person is highly educated academically, if he cannot go beyond the sphere of mental activities, then he is sure to perform only material activities and thus remain impure. So that's the difference between somebody who is Krishna conscious and somebody who is not. Now, somebody can be very, very intelligent, and he can know how to use his how to move the material nature. So how to make money, how to do this, how to influence people. But if there is no Krishna behind all these activities, then he will be still connected with the material nature, and he will not be able to transcend this material nature. Maybe he will be the most intelligent of the, you know, of the materialistic people. But even the simplest devotee who may not know anything, but he knows that he is a servant of the Lord, he is more intelligent than that person. Yes.
It says here that if he cannot go beyond the sphere of mental activities, what is the sphere of mental activities?
Well, it's how to be engaged in the material sphere.
In the material sphere.
Yes. So he cannot get beyond that. He knows how to move the material energy. He knows how to not do things within the material world. And he may be very attractive by that. So, and it can be a person who may have some siddhis. But he will not be able to not transcend his thoughts not beyond the material sphere. So whatever he thinks of, it can be so, no, look so high, but it will still stay within. Like the scientists, they can think of how did the universe was created. Shastra is there explaining it. No, that's not true. Okay, so it's Big Bang, right? So at the time of Big Bang, then there was the matter was unlimitedly, you know, small and dense, and just by accident it exploded, and now it's now actually getting faster and faster. Now the expansion of the universe. So it's like there are many theories, but they don't have practical explanations, and they don't have any proof for it. In fact, people are so foolish that before, well, it started in America, now Russians do it. They have, if you have disease, which incurable disease, so then when you are dying, so then they can freeze your body. And they will keep it freeze until now there will be some cure found for the disease. So they will unfreeze you and they will cure you. Now, that's more costly, right? So, for those who don't have so much money, so then they found that if you don't have money to freeze your body, so then we will just freeze your head. So then they cut off your head, they take the brain out, and then freeze the brain. So then, when the cure is found, so we will stitch the brain to another body, and then it will be living. It just costs what? Maybe like, I don't know, some tens of thousands of euros. So just go for it. So, I mean, it sounds something now pretty wonderful, right? But they did not successfully really unfreeze anybody yet. But later on they will have technology how to do it. We are not perfect in it now, but no, later on, yes, just give money, we will do it. So it's a hope that, yes, I can live for a little bit more. It gives me the idea that, yeah, I can buy some more life. Some scientists predicted that within 20 years they will develop immortality. They will have some the with the nanotechnology, they will create any organ whatever the body needs. So whatever goes bad with the nanotechnology, then they will just maintain it. So then you may create some robots, not just that, but they will be immortal. In fact, better than the originals. So people go for it because they like to hear these things. I don't have to do anything and I can enjoy more. And I can live longer. It sounds wonderful. But it's not possible. If you want to achieve something, then some sacrifice must be done. Now even, what was the name of that king? He had son Puru? Nobody knows. Anyway, he was the king, right? And he was very old. But he wanted to enjoy, a little bit more.
Yati.
Yati. So then he was, if I get youth from any of my sons, I can just enjoy that. So then he asked the eldest son, please then can you give me your youth for some time? I would like to enjoy some more. The son said, are you crazy? No, I want to enjoy myself. I don't want to take your old form. No, I don't want to do that. Then he asked all his sons like this and the same answer. Only the youngest one, he was not attached. He said, yes, if it pleases you, then whatever, take it. No, you can enjoy. I will be happy with the old age. So then he took it. He enjoyed for some years. And after that, seeing actually the nature of Puru, his son, so then he returned the youth back to him. And he, actually put him as a king because he said, you'll be the most qualified to become the king. So, this is, hold on. What are the types of happiness? In the Tantra Shastra, Lord Shiva speaks to his wife, Sati, in this way. My dear wife, a person who has surrendered himself at the lotus feet of Govinda and who has thus developed pure Krishna consciousness can be very easily awarded all the perfections desired by the impersonalists. And beyond this, he can enjoy the happiness achieved by the pure devotees. Happiness derived from pure devotional service is the highest because it is eternal. The happiness derived from material perfection or understanding oneself to be Brahman is inferior because it is temporary. There is no preventing one's falling down from material happiness. And there is even every chance of falling down from the spiritual happiness derived out of identifying oneself with the impersonal Brahman. So the same point. Devotional service is the only way how we can identify ourselves as the servant of the Lord and then achieve the perfection, which gives us is the relationship to the Lord. Now, if we identify ourselves as part of Brahman, then that requires that we are inactive. So, some acharyas consider it as a spiritual suicide. And in fact, we may remain in Brahman for a very long time, but at the time when we again desire for an activity, a thought or an activity, then that's not what, then we cannot stay in the Brahman. So we will again fall down, onto the earth here, the material world. So there is no point. What is material happiness? See this. The mystic perfections achieved by actually successful yogis are 8 in number. The animosity refers to the power by which one can become so small that he can enter into a stone. Mahimasiddhi empowers one to increase size of his body. In Lagimasiddhi, there is development of the power to become so light that one can float on in the air or on the water. A yogi can touch the moon, which is with his finger, with siddhi called prapti or acquisition. The yoga siddhi known as Ishita, one can create and destroy an entire planet simply at will. Another perfection is called Vashita, and by this perfection one can bring anyone under his control. But by Prakamya power, one can achieve anything he likes within the scope of nature. The highest perfection of mystic power is called Kamavasaita, which permits one to contradict nature. In other words, to do the impossible. So, siddhis are there, but they are all based on the 5 gross elements and the subtle elements which we found within the material nature. There is nothing beyond that. But because those achieving the siddhi, then they can look like they are contradicting the nature. They are in control of the nature. Like there was very nice movie about Gyaneshwar. Now there was Gyaneshwar as a devotee of the Lord. Then he performed how do you call that?
Illusion?
No, it wasn't illusion, it was actually real.
Mystical?
Yeah, something like mystical.
Sleight of hand,
like miracles, okay. Can say miracles, okay. So, then one day he was. There was some discussion between a yogi who was in the material world for tens of thousands of years, and now he had under his power animals. So he was riding a tiger, and many animals just were following him. He was in control of them. But he was thinking that Ganeshwar is some useless fellow. Okay, so let him come. Now he will come, and then I'll defeat him. So he said, okay. So he came with his brothers, and he came flying on a piece of wall because they were reading the letter on a wall. He said, okay, let's go to see him. So then just started to fly on a wall, piece of wall. So they came there, let the wall sit down. And then the yogi was just telling him. And then he bowed down. He said, I have achieved siddhis over the living beings after thousands of years of penances, but I see that you have higher siddhis by your sadhana, because you achieved power over the inanimate. So I become a disciple. You please teach me. So for the devotee, it's not really something very special, but and the siddhis are many times described as just like a side effect. Because even within the acharyas, there were many descriptions how they have some siddhis, but they are not going to show off or to perform some shows. But they do have them. So there is nothing extraordinary on it. But we should understand the siddhis, not to endeavor for them. Because many times when we set the goal, we want to endeavor for something, we want to endeavor for one specific siddhi. Once you achieve it, then what? You may feel like, I achieved the goal, and then I don't need anything else. And because of that, then you may feel like that you achieved your goal of life, and you may not know what to do next. So siddhis are not the best thing to really desire. Okay, so we have tomorrow we'll finish the first chapter. And then then the questions are there for the essays already, so you can already look through it, and then you can write it after that.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama.